Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. Representative O'Driscoll moves the minutes of 3:15:16. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Next, we will have Kelly Knight, Director of Human Resources, to explain three personnel reports that we will vote on. Ms. Knight, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, you have three documents before you, and these represent the personnel actions that have occurred since the last time that this report was brought before rules. A couple of items to note. People may appear more than once. For example, if their hire date and, for instance, a subsequent promotion, both occurred within the dates of this report. Also, too, you'll see designation IN for inactive. This status represents the person's current status as of Thursday when the report was printed. So that is always a current status and not the status at the time the action occurred.
Okay, any questions? Okay, I will move the report on appointments. Unless there's anybody that had any questions, no. I will move the report on appointments. Discussion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed. Ms. Knight?
The second report is the change in status, and these are the changes that have occurred since the last time this report was brought before rules.
Any questions for Ms. Knight? I will move the report on change in status. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed. Ms. Knight?
The final report is a listing of those individuals who have been terminated since our last report.
Are there any questions for Ms. Knight? I will move the report on terminations. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Knight. Now, next, we'll take up the proposed amendments to the permanent rules of the House and the joint rules of the Senate and House. Mr. McCormick, Director of House Research, will explain the procedural process followed when amending the rules. Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, the various changes to House rules and joint rules were referred to the committee at the last floor session. In general, when we change House rules, we do so through a committee report, which can either appear as just a simple committee report or as a resolution of the House. And under House rules, a change in House rules that is reported by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration may be adopted by a simple majority of members of the House. If a motion is made on the floor to change a rule, that requires a two-thirds vote. So this committee has a privileged ability to change House rules with concurrence of a simple majority of the House. So as we adopt House rules today, you should consider that these will be going out if you adopt them as a committee report, and a simple majority of the House can debate and amend and adopt. Joint rules, however, are somewhat different. As we consider joint rules, the committee chooses to accept a change to a joint rule, then the next step would be that I would draft what is known as a House concurrent resolution. And any changes made to joint rules would be drafted into a House concurrent resolution, which would be traditionally authored by the majority leader and would be referred to the Rules Committee for review. So if we make a change to joint rules, probably you're going to get a second chance at it when a concurrent resolution is drafted, introduced, and referred to rules. So those are just the procedural steps that were underway here.
Any questions for Mr. McCormick? Okay, seeing none, why don't we go ahead and start with the proposed amendment to House Rule 1.50. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
how this proposed amendment deals with the so-called midnight rule, and it would say that the House can't meet past midnight except during the last 2 weeks of session. You know, typically today we can just do that by a majority vote at any time during session. This would limit that to the last 2 weeks of session. Of course, the rule can always be suspended, as we would, you know, always suspend a rule. So you could meet past midnight at two-thirds vote, even under this rule. But it would just raise the standard for that. And the idea here, obviously, both parties have met past midnight in the past. I've heard safety concerns raised by members related to that. We had one of our members get into a pretty serious accident a couple years ago, coming home at 5 a.m. And it's also just one of those situations where, you know, once you get past midnight, the public probably isn't paying as much attention to the extent that they are ever to the work that we're doing here. So I would ask for your support on this. Thanks.
Okay, is there any discussion from members? Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This issue gets politicized. It shouldn't be political. It really is a safety issue. We should, and I don't know that we will today, but hopefully at some point decide together that it's not in the interest of the motoring public for us to be on the roads after midnight, and it's not in our interest to be on the road after midnight. And with a little planning, we could make this work.
Any other discussion from members? Is there anyone who wants to testify to this amendment in the audience? Okay, I don't see anyone. Members, I'm going to ask for a no vote today on this amendment and others. And the reason is because we had an opportunity to do this last year, the first year of the biennium, and that's traditionally when we've always done it. We only have a little less than 8 weeks to get all of our work done today. I don't necessarily think these amendments are a bad idea, but I just want to remind everyone, with the exception of maybe Representative Flanagan, who wasn't here, I did send an email out and had a chance to speak with former Speaker Thiessen a few times on the issue and to see if there were ideas for proposed rules changes. So my preference would be to do this in the after the next election when we set the permanent rules of the House. So you know the permanent rules have already been printed. We've already been operating under them. And I think last year would have been the appropriate time to do the rules. And so while I don't necessarily think that these rules are a bad change, I don't think this is the appropriate time to do it. I did do a little bit of research, too. And in the last 15 years, I think one time has there been a rule change in the last 15 years, and that was in 2010 when there was a rather egregious situation where some lobbyists were sitting at the committee table with along with the House members, which had never been done before, so the rules were changed. Other than that, I don't think the rules had been changed for at least 15 years on a even yeared session, and that's because the permanent rules are made the first year. And that's why I really spent a lot of time working on this last year and speaking with members and sending out emails and asking for input from the minority leader and others. And I know things change, but I just don't think this is the time to do it. I think the time now is for us to get our work done in the Minnesota House and not to continue to change the rules and spend several hours on the floor. So members, I would ask for a no vote today on this amendment. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Let's see. Representative Thiessen is the next one. Rule 4.015, the proposed change to Rule 4.015. Do you want to address that?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this language deals with something that comes up on the House floor somewhat regularly, again on both sides of the aisle, depending, I suppose, where you are on a particular bill. But it would say that it's basically, it would put into our rules what we have in our Constitution and in our statutes, which is, or in our Constitution, excuse me, but that bills should only embrace a single subject. Again, on both sides of the aisle, it has been common practice in recent years and growing as a practice, I would say, not just in the last year, but over the last several years, that we are throwing more and more things into single bills and then passing them off. Something I hear from my constituents about quite a bit when I'm trying to explain why I didn't vote for something they liked because it had a lot of other stuff in there, or why I voted for something they didn't like because I was trying to vote because I wanted to vote for in favor of another provision in the bill. So this would say that no bill can embrace more than one subject, which is really our constitutional standard, and no bill shall encompass more than one policy topic. And then as for finance bills, because those do need to be larger bills because they are finance bills, so they do, by definition in some sense, our omnibus bills cover more than one specific policy subject, but it would also say that no policy would be included in those bills unless it is attached to money that's being spent in the bill. And the reason I think it's important that we put this in the in our rules is because the Speaker cannot rule on constitutional challenges. So if someone were to rise on the floor today and say, I think this violates the single subject rule, that would be that would be something the Speaker couldn't rule on. By putting it into our rules, it gives the Speaker the chance to, for any member to raise a legitimate point of order, and for the Speaker to say that a bill is out of order because it is covering too many subjects. So I know this, again, is something that people have brought up repeatedly. And I would say, you know, there's no question that the majority leader did reach out to us last year, to all of us, and to me, to ask about proposed changes to the rules. But you also, you learn in this job, right? And I spent a lot more time thinking about this over the last year, and I do think that even though this isn't a typical odd year where we're dealing with the permanent rules, I think it's in our constituents' interest that we, you know, when good ideas come forward, that we're willing to act on them. So I would hope that we can have a substantive discussion around this and not reject these just because this happens to be 2016 instead of 2015. But I would ask your support on this amendment to the rules.
Any further discussion from members?
And I'd ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
Okay, roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Any discussion from members? Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify to the amendment 4.015? Okay. Then the clerk shall take the roll.
Pepin?
No.
Albright?
No.
Bernardi?
Aye.
Flanagan?
Aye.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hoppe?
No.
Hortman?
Aye.
Isaacson?
Aye.
Kreisha?
No.
Mack?
No.
Nelson?
Aye.
O'Driscoll?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pulowski?
Aye.
Pinto?
Aye.
Sanders?
No.
Scott?
No.
Swidinski?
No.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Being 9 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Thiessen, to your 2.015 amendment.
Madam Chair, I think since this would have to come back again, as I understand, Mr. McCormick, why don't we set that one aside? And it's the same thing that we just voted on, so I can guess what the outcome will be too. But we'll if we need to put it in a form of a concurrent joint resolution, we can come back and do that at some other point.
But not for today?
Yes, set it aside for, yes.
Okay. Let's see, what's next? The amendment to Rule 8.01. publication of reimbursement of house on house website.
Yes, and there is an A1 amendment on this one as well, I believe. Which I will talk about. I guess it's going to be handed out now. So, and it's based on discussions with House staff, just to give a little bit more flexibility to the rule. So, this rule, you know, Madam Chair, why don't we go to the next one? Let them hand out the amendment. Would that work for you?
Sure.
And then we can come back to this one.
Okay. The next one I have, Representative Thiessen, is the Rule 2.43, I think you wanted to do next.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
So House Rule 2.43, currently the House, to back up a little bit, we have passed in statute that our state should satisfy certain standards that have been developed by Minute. I mean, they're enforcing them. They've actually, based on outside standards and the federal government standards, about accessibility of information put out by the House. For instance, for people that have sight difficulties, that they would be able to access the documents and have a computer reader read the documents for them. Currently, not all the documents we put on our House website are accessible in that manner, which means that there's many Minnesota citizens who can't get access to those documents. And so what this would put into our House rules is to say that the House is going to comply with the standards that we have required the rest of the state comply with, giving us some flexibility if there is an undue burden, meaning a significant cost, and that we develop a process for addressing those exceptions that we would make. And I don't know, there's one person that may want to testify on this legislation. Mr. Heller, do you want to testify briefly? If that's okay, Madam Chair.
That'd be fine. I think you still wanted to move the amendment?
I'd like to move the amendment, yes.
Okay, Representative Thiessen moves to amend Rule 2.43. And feel free to come down, and then if you could just state your name for the committee. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name before you begin your testimony.
Yes, Ms. Pepin, Chair of Rules and Legislative Administration. My name is Rick Heller. I'm officially represented twice exceptional and print disabled. I don't know where I should start, but let's start with content accessibility law, I guess, since that's what we're considering. I have a handout that's going around from the Attorney General, I believe, that basically says that I believe it has to do with how the legislature has exempt themselves from Transparency Law Chapter 13 and Content Accessibility Law. And I believe they're essential and they need each other, because if a document is not searchable or readable, or both, the current situation in the Minnesota legislature is not transparent for the public. One example of this would be, for instance, your own committee documents called Fourth Deadline PDF. That's an image, currently an image document. Another one for today is a conference committee PDF. Another image. These are not readable at all with a reader. They're images. The Higher Education Act added the word opportunity in 2008. It only included two types of lifetime learners, blindness and print disability. There's four types of people that are printed disabled found at the American Printing House of the Blind, which is covers K through 12 only. However, I believe it's they're all lifetime learners. There's blind, visually impaired, pre-readers, and non-readers. I unofficially represent perhaps the pre-readers or English language learners and non-traditional readers. There's two ways of acquiring information enjoyed and provided the same service by the Minnesota legislature with ease and use, is silent and oral. Assistive technology removes and helps the ability of how people acquire information effectively. We only have 7 seconds to store information effectively and our work in memory. It's for our long-term memory and build upon it. Assistive technology helps at the function of processing. Not everybody can read well by third grade, frankly. Children have to be rewired to read well. That's Minnesota statute by third grade. However, if they don't read well, virtually become non-traditional readers. Assistive technology is to allow that ability to become text-to-speech oral language. If 92% of us are born to acquire information orally, not to read well, and to think at a high level, I think this group has a obligation to provide equality and equal accessibility for those individuals. Again, blind and print disability. One other thing. Another example, after this meeting, is a 5 p.m. meeting, our select committee of affordable care, child care, in room 5. There's a lot of bills currently that have HFXXXXX. Last year, the Minnesota legislature, with help from Minute, made sure that struck through an underlying language would be read out loud with JAWS. It was the first time. One of the few in the nation that allows that to happen. However, these bills haven't even been introduced on the floor, it's my understanding. And here we are introducing PDFs that are not fully accessible. Yet, if you look at the ones that are read on the floor, then they become fully accessible in HTML or web page format. The PDFs do not read struck through an underlying language. We are doing a disprivilege to the whole process. This goes back on a 4-year complaint that used to go to State Services of the Blind. Now Jay Wyatt, Chief Information Officer at Minute, is taking those concerns. But here we are. Was it in the 90s we started introducing computers? And here we are, 21st century? And the documents are electronic? What service are we providing for the citizens of Minnesota that are blind and print disabled? I think it's very relevant that perhaps the Senate might consider this as well. And I believe there is money available through Jay Wyatt. Like I said before, the Rivalizers worked with Jay Wyatt with LCC to make sure that the structure in our language, that was a grant money. I'd be glad to provide those documents, including the one I have from the it says Heller Human Rights tagged. That's the one that you got handed out. I make sure that gets posted in the format it was created in. They went through that state agency went through some revisions to make that more fully accessible for the full audience. Again, this bill is for all the audiences found in the Higher Education Opportunity Act. And I think that if you all have jobs, the Workforce Innovation Act added the word opportunity in 2014. What is this word opportunity, may I ask? Frankly, opportunity is about a functional thing that people can get access, how they acquire, enjoy, and again, provide the same services with ease and use. I believe the Minnesota legislature and this leadership in this meeting needs to vote a yes on this. That's all I have to say. Any questions, I'd be glad to provide those.
Any questions for Mr. Heller? Thank you for your testimony today.
I would ask if there's any data practice people, again, that are here. I invited one or two. You're welcome to come in on this, because if I believe, again, Chapter 13, data practice law, and which I testified with this flyer, if you go there, how I connected transparency to accessibility law, how they meet one another and complement each other. Again, it says electronic in data practice, but it doesn't define what it is. And here we are in the 21st century, I think it's something to consider. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Any other discussion from members? Anyone else wants to testify? Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. As many of you know, I've been around for a long time lobbying as just a resident, a citizen of Minnesota. I met this gentleman to my right maybe 5-6 years ago, wandering the halls just like Rich Neumeister does, but lobbies and stuff. And he was there for a particular cause, and he's been persevering about it, hung on to it, which many citizens don't for a lot of reasons. And I think this is a fruition of his work. And I've heard people from both sides of the aisle in favor of this kind of stuff. And he's talked to a number of those people. So I think it's a straight thing, up or down. I think it's a very positive thing. It's something that works with the technology. And the remark that was said that this is the 21st century, it is. And it's one of the things even I'm starting to get to know more about as I get more and more on computers. So I would suggest this would be a very positive step for House Rules.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Neumeister? No. Thank you, members. I would again ask for a no vote on this, and this may be something that we could take up next year and consider next year, but again, we changed the rules in the first year of the biennium, and so I'm asking for a no vote. Any other member discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen renews his motion to move to amend House Rule 2.43. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay?
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Thiessen, what did you want to take it? Did you want to go back to 8.01 next?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you.
Okay, Representative Thiessen.
So you should now have before you an amendment, delete all amendment to what was originally the amendment to 801. And if we could just move that and put it on so we can talk about it in that form, if that would be okay.
Sure. Representative Thiessen moves the Rule 8.01 amendment, and then he will, to get in the shape that he wants, he's asked to move the amendment to the amendment, which I think makes sense since he wants to talk about the amendment in the shape that he wants to talk about it. So all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Now it is in the shape that you would like. Representative Thiessen, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, this amendment to the rules would say that we are going to make available to the public in an easily accessible manner, basically on a website, per diem, our mileage, our lodging, other reimbursements to be updated on a monthly basis, as well as committee budgets and a quarterly update on expenditures for those budgets. I guess I would say all of this information is actually under statute currently publicly available. So people can go in and make a request for it. And as you probably know, the press often does and publishes a lot of this information. The idea here would just be to open up our process so it's more readily available to the general public instead of having to go through a process of making a data practices request and then obtaining the information. Again, just an effort to use the technology that we have today to make our processes more transparent. And I'd ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Is there a cost to this? Mr. Reinholz, did you want to?
I think it's minor, but it'd probably be helpful for Mr. Reinholz
to talk. Yes, if you could talk about this, Mr. Reinholz, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Reinholz, House Controller. I looked at this, and with the amendment, there would be minimal cost, the flexibility that gave us. I'm not expecting that we would have, obviously doable with minimal cost.
Okay. Representative Portman, thank you.
I don't know if this is the amendment that this is relevant to the House budget. I just have a question about one of the line items that seems kind of large, and I can't imagine quite the explanation for it. Is office equipment $480,000? Or, well, what kind of office equipment are we spending up?
Mr. Reinholtz?
That money on.
Do you have a copy of it? He probably doesn't have a copy of it.
Chair, I don't have a copy. It's being referred to.
Which, Representative Portman, which document is it in?
The document that is to Kurt Dowd and Joyce Pepin, dated January 25th, 2016, quarterly financial statement from Jim Reinholtz, House Comptroller. And it looks like we budgeted $647,000 for office equipment, and we've so far spent $167,000, which means we have $480,000 left.
Madam Chair, I mean,
Mr. Reynolds,
go back and look at the my budget, and there are items behind that. But what that would typically would be computers and computer equipment. We've been in a process the last few years of updating on a lot of the computer hardware at the house.
Representative Portman?
And then I think my second question might be for you. Registration fees and tuition under travel and subsistence, are those for things like CSG and NCSL? We've budgeted $45,000. We've spent $27,000. We have $17,000 left.
Show me what line you're on, Representative Portman.
I wish there were line numbers. In the middle section, under travel and subsistence, the two bottom expenditures, registration fees and tuition, and then travel, and it says including mini session, and I don't know what the mini session was. Oh, the special session?
Madam Chair,
Reynolds?
Registration and fees does cover both staff and members attending NCSL, with more staff than members. Staff, particularly some of the staff of House Research Department, are attorneys and required to take various classes to keep their bar standing, I believe, and we do pay for those. So it's a combination of those. We do not. It says tuition. We are not paying tuition for anyone at this point. The transportation costs are going to be travel costs related to those when committees are traveling and mileage costs are coming in, when people are going to the airline tickets if they're going to outstate, which there has been very few, NCSL, that type of cost.
Senator Portman?
What was the mini session? When it says mini session, does that mean special session?
Madam Chair, that's just a budget category that we have. There has been no mini sessions at this point. This is the categories of budget that we have established. There has been mini sessions for quite a few years. We probably could drop that from the name there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholtz. Any additional questions for Mr. Reinholtz? And Mr. Reinholtz, just to clarify, so this information is available to the public if requested?
Madam Chair, yes, by practice and past practices, we have made this information available to the public that when they ask for it. The summary, the one that you were handed out that is a summary sheet, I believe with each member that shows the categories is one that we do send routinely out to the news media when they request information on expenditures. Committee budget reports, I don't think I've ever had a request from the public for those, but we do hand those out to staff members without asking them to keep it confidential. So I think I would have sent that out if I'd had a request for it.
Sure.
The quarterly financial report is actually in statute, states that it is to be made available, I believe. That is one that I would send out if anybody asked for the total house spending, yes.
Madam Chair, request a roll call on the motion.
Representative Pinto requests a roll call. A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Any other questions? Oh, Representative Neumeister? Mr. Neumeister. I was looking at you, Representative Garofalo, and somehow the two got merged.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think this is a positive piece of legislation. I've been here now for a number of decades, at least the last 10. I've approached both parties' leadership about trying to bring the legislature, particularly the House, into some form of information policy for the public, for transparency. and both have, they fall on deaf ears of both parties' leadership historically. One of the reasons why is that the legislature is not under data practices. As the gentleman preceded you stated, it is practice. It is practice. I've asked for information. I've gotten some tough-minded, well, it's not public, but persistence pays off. Particularly with the media, it will usually get it. I think, again, bringing into the 21st century, and it shouldn't be whether or not it was done, its rules should be done at the beginning of the year of a session or the second part of the session. This is just good public policy. Good public policy, I think, shouldn't be a political gamesmanship. And this type of issue should not be a political gamesmanship. One of the things, the questions I do have, though, if you're going to press forward on this, is that, one, I saw with the new amendment, housing stipend is cut out. Would that be considered a reimbursement, though? Or is it because of the word stipend means it would not be reportable? Again, different words mean different things.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. I agree, that is a problem. Representative Thiessen.
I think the word lodging was put in place.
Okay.
In place of housing stipend. I think that's the budgetary
language.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister.
And then, Madam Chair, the second point,
okay,
that let's say it's on a monthly basis. So I wanted to ask for the per diem of a Democrat and a Republican. And it's January 23rd. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Neumeister. We got to give you December's, but it's not January, the end of January yet, so we don't have our quarterly, you know, the monthly report on the per diem. Uh-uh. The point is, if you got per diem through January 22nd, I want the per diem for January 22nd. So all I'm trying to say is that, oh, it's on the web. The excuse of it being online should not be a rationale for denying someone an excuse for someone that wants something in person, something that might be current. Again, you are not under data practices. That is another time for some more discussion at another time. But this is good public policy. So I just want to share that with you for this body.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Neumeister just mentioned it. We don't typically take testimony in this committee, and we've already had quite a bit of it, and you just mentioned this is a deeper in the weeds type discussion, and I think if we're going to have a data practices discussion, we should publicly notice it and have a committee hearing about it and do it justice rather than trying to do it here in an evening when, you know, people don't know that this is what we're going to be talking about. And Madam Chair, I would encourage the members to or encourage you Representative Thiessen to get together and figure out a way to send this to the data practices committee. And, you know, this might be a very good idea. Maybe we should do this, but if we're going to do it, then we should give it the attention that it deserves and not be having testimony here in the evening when not everybody knew about this hearing or the depth to which we were going to be going on this subject.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just first to answer Mr. Neumeister's question, I think anybody that makes a request for this information on January 23rd would be able to get it as of January. This shouldn't change the current practice, and I think that's the other point. So two things I would say. First, I think we should have that discussion about the Data Practices Act, and when we introduced some of these ideas in January, one of the proposals was to have the Data Practices Committee convene a task force to figure out how best to apply the Data Practices Act to the legislature, because I think we ought to move in that direction. That is a complicated issue. This is not a complicated issue. All of this information is already publicly available, and we've already decided it's publicly available. You just have to come and ask for it. So putting this information on the web, I don't really think changes gets into it. I don't think it's actually a particularly deep or complicated issue. This is just saying, you know, if you have per diem, mileage, lodging, things that anybody can come in and say, I want that report today, let's just put it on the web to make it easy for people to get it. Similarly with the committee budgets and the quarterly updates on the House expenditures, again, anybody can come in today and say, can I have that? Why not just put it up on the web so it's easily accessible? So I agree with Representative Hoppe. There's a lot more complicated issues to deal with in this area. I just don't think this is one of them.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And after the testimony and comments of Representative Hoppe, one of the things, as a CFO, I understand closing accounting periods, and one of the things that we're doing here is we're asking for data to be live before we've actually been able to close those accounting periods, which actually could be a disservice because we need to be able to let the counters and the controllers get through that to make sure that the information they're putting out is accurate. So this is a broader conversation, and quite honestly, as a former CFO and somebody who's worked through this, if we don't allow them to get to that, and while I understand what the testifier is saying, but when you ask for data right in the middle of an accounting period without understanding all of the adjustments that can be made, you are getting incorrect data. And so let's let our controllers do their jobs. I would recommend we have a larger conversation, as Representative Hoppe said, and let's do this right and not just pass this through and think that we're being transparent when we're really allowing the controllers not to do their job.
Thank you. And Representative Hoppe, I agree that we normally don't take testimony on the bill, especially when it's a bill that has appeared before other committees. I did want to give the public a bit of a chance to give their piece. Is there any other testimony on this bill? We could take some brief testimony. I think if you could just state your name before.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Don Gemberling. I'm with the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information, a nonpartisan volunteer group of lawyers, journalists, librarians, citizens, and I can't think that kind of covers us. We see one of the important objectives of democracy is to make as much information about the government available to the public as possible, because that's how we hold our government accountable. On the side, because I've been doing these kinds of issues for a long time, I also teach, and I taught a course on transparency a couple of years ago through the University of Minnesota Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And in researching transparency, I learned something for somebody my age, which I should have learned a long time ago. These days, transparency has multiple meanings. And increasingly, for most people, what transparency means is not access to information. It means the government and other organizations publish information, because that's how people tend to look for it. I talk to people all the time, because one of the other things we do is we do answer questions from the public. And people are saying, how do I get access to information about the legislature? And you're right, you do need to have a larger discussion about that. But essentially, I say you go to the legislative website, and what's there is what you get, okay? And I think the purpose of this change to the rule is to make sure that certain critical financial information is available to the public in a way that the public tends to look for things. And that's how transparency works these days. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Is there any other member discussion? Any questions? Okay, members, I too, for many of the reasons stated, would ask for a no vote today. And again, I don't believe this is the time to change the rules, perhaps a larger discussion in data practices or something at another time, but I don't think that this is the time or the place for this particular amendment. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Pepin?
No.
Albright?
No.
Bernardi?
Aye.
Flanagan?
Aye.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hoppe?
No.
Portman?
Aye.
Isaacson?
Aye.
Kreshaw?
No.
Mack?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
O'Driscoll?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pelosky? Pinto?
Aye.
Sanders?
No.
Scott?
No.
Swidinsky?
No.
Thiessen?
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail, and the amendment as amended is not adopted. Next on the agenda is Joint Rule 2.06, changes to Joint Rule 2.06. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Could I ask, Madam Chair, can I ask a question of Mr. McCormick?
Sure. Mr. McCormick?
So later on, we have the concurrent resolution that was sent down on the joint rule. There was a concurrent resolution that was sent down. If we were to put some of these amendments to the joint rules on that, would that then satisfy being the concurrent resolution that the floor could just take up right away?
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, later in your packet, you'll have Senate concurrent resolution number 8. Senator Representative Thiessen moved to amend that by adding a fourth deadline, and that motion was sent down to the committee. If we attempt, in the meantime, after that was sent down, the House ratified Senate concurrent resolution number 8, and so it is no longer before the body. Therefore, there's two methods to go forward on these. One is we would draft a new concurrent resolution, a House concurrent resolution, debate that and pass that and send it to the Senate for their concurrence. Or we arguably could maybe move to reconsider Senate concurrent resolution, the vote by which Senate concurrent resolution was adopted. If we're going to go down that route, I want to have the chief clerk talk to me before I say that's possible.
Madam Chair, if I could ask Mr. McCormick one other time. One other question. Could we just use this amendment, like the one that is now that I'd like to move on amendments to Rule 2.06, the joint rules, and move that as a concurrent resolution and then add the rest of these as amendments to that so we don't have to make the double step of coming back here again?
Madam Chair, members, under House rules, a committee bill may be constructed by a committee. You may be plowing new ground, but I think it's within the reasonable and approach that, yes, you could adopt this and introduce a committee resolution. In that case, all the joint amendments as adopted by the Rules Committee tonight would be introduced as a committee concurrent resolution debated on the floor. And barring a Chief Justice calling me up and yelling me after he hears this, it seems like a reasonable approach consonant with our other House rules.
Okay.
Representative Thiessen?
Well, Madam Chair, then I would like to move proposed joint rule changes to propose to the joint rule 2.06, and I'd like us to consider that as a committee concurrent resolution. And what this does, members, is it says that basically it does two things. It says this Rule 2.06 relates to conference committees, and it says, first of all conference committees shall provide an opportunity for public testimony, which I think is kind of the general practice, but we don't have that in our rule. And secondly, it says that at least 12 hours before a conference committee meets to adopt a report, that the public would have to be notified that the conference committee is meeting to adopt the report, and it would have to allow for public testimony at that meeting on the, you know. So basically, you'd have to get your concurrent report out to people so that they can see it in advance and can come in and testify on it before that final report is adopted and then sent to the floor.
Okay. Thank you. But Mr. McCormick, this would have to go to the Senate for their vote as well?
Madam Chair, members, after adoption of these, we would introduce a House concurrent resolution. It would be debated on the floor, amended potentially on the floor, and then the Senate would have to receive that and concur. If the Senate made amendments to it, then that would go to a conference committee. Just as a aside, that's somewhat the process we followed in 1999, 2001, 2009, which are the last three times we adopted joint rules.
Okay, thank you. Is there member discussion on this?
So,
Representative Thiessen.
And Madam Chair, if we're going to proceed this way, I'd actually like to offer the changes to Rule 2.08 as an amendment to the proposed joint rule to 2.06, so that we can do this as one big concurrent resolution.
Okay. Representative Thiessen moves the change to joint rule 2.08 to be amended to the joint rule 2.06 change. Representative Thiessen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This language would require the adoption of joint targets 14 days before the constitutional date of adjournment. They would be presented to the LCPFP, that there'd be a public hearing and public comment on those joint targets, and then it would allow for later revisions, but that would then have to return back to the LCPFP for their approval. The idea here is that, you know, one of the things we run into very often, again, for the last several years, is a situation where joint targets are not agreed upon until the last minute, and or not the last minute, that's not fair, but close to adjournment. And what that does is it makes it difficult to get the conference committees prepared in time for people to read them and review them. It also makes it difficult for the public to have input on, you know, what those decisions need to be, what decisions need to be made. And it eliminates the power of a lot of the members in the body, you know, and I know this from experience both on the inside and outside of this process. What it does is concentrates the power of decision making in very few hands at the legislature. So I think that getting the joint targets out there 14 days in advance is good discipline for us. It allows the public to have more input into the final product that we send out of the legislature, and it empowers most of the rank and file members in a way that we haven't done in recent years. I would offer, well, there, you're getting the language of an, I can just offer an oral amendment if I could. To
an oral amendment, the amendment?
And it would be after, in the last, very last line, and you have a copy of it in front of you, but the only change on that is in the very last line, before the word that revision at the very end, you would say and accept or reject. So basically saying that the LCPFP would have to accept or reject any revision to the joint targets that they'd adopted as well.
So, Thiessen, it's your amendment.
So I'd like to incorporate it.
So I think you can just incorporate it.
Yep.
Yes,
thank
it'd be
you.
Fine.
So, Madam Chair, that is what this does. And I'd like a roll call.
Okay, roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call on the amendment to the amendment. I hope everybody's clear and follow that. We are taking up the 2.06 rule change suggestion, joint rule change amendment. But this, what we are voting on now, will be the rule 2.08 amendment to the amendment as amended. Any discussion? Oh, and just to restate the amendment to the amendment, the last line, the commission shall meet and hear testimony on that and accept or reject the revision, is that correct?
That revision, that's correct.
Okay, is everybody clear on what we are voting on? Okay, members, I would recommend a no vote on this. I haven't had any discussion. Oh, I see that there is some testimony. We can take some quick testimony here and then we'll vote.
Madam Chair, my name is Rich Neumeister. I have to give you credit for having public testimony on something like this, because it is the rules that dictate a lot of transparency and accountability, no matter who's in power. Republicans or Democrats. So I say it's important to have public testimony on these kinds of things. I would just like to share with you, I think it's important on the 206 to adopt. I've seen too many bills, conference committee reports come out like greased pigs, and you can't get a hold of it. And there, again, from my experience of dealing with data practices, little provisions in law are put in there that even some of the members don't need know about, and that can cause a lot of harm to public accountability and transparency. And then only afterwards you find out about it. 12 hours is an important thing. I'll just give you one example. Several years ago, there was language put in a conference tax bill that said the triple IRB, a lot of their data would not be available to the public on how issues came about. Now, this was done in a bipartisan way. I think the House at that time was Republican and the Senate was Democrat. But what happened when the public learned about it, particularly up in northern Minnesota, about the Excelsior initiative and all that some of you may know about, it took several years to change that law. Bipartisanly supported by Tom Enzell and Ms. Holberg at that time. So, Madam Chair, I think this is a good, 206 is a good thing. Again, it goes for transparency and accountability, and I encourage you to pass it And again, to rely on, well, this is not 2015, and it's 2016. Accountability and transparency can begin at any time. I think 2016 is an appropriate time also. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for the few moments of your time.
Thank you. And Mr. Heller?
Rick Heller speaking, for the public. Not too many public here tonight. However, I've been reviewing the auditor's report. They have exempted themselves from content accessibility policy. Their documents are not functional. They're not provided in a timely manner. Mean the same time as your audience during committees. Yet, as far as them making them functional, they don't have accessibility policy. In fact, they don't have to do it, and I have yet to get the correspondence back from Mr. Nobles regarding that, even though he testified this year and last year that he was going to get back in writing. So once again, the other part of this is third-party vendors come down here. LCC does not have accessibility policy. Or how can they encourage something in a continual improvement program when people don't know about it? I think this is all relevant, that when people get it, they get it in a way that they can access it, not the very last second or maybe days later after session. I think that's unfair for the public regarding transparency and for engagement. You're running a show. You're not running a show. People need to be engaged in this process. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. And just as a reminder to members, we are voting on the amendment to the amendment, which is essentially the joint rule 2.08 with the additional language. Is everybody clear on the vote? And again, members, I would request a no vote on this and the underlying amendment as well. I haven't had a chance to speak with Representative Bach. This would go through, obviously a joint rule change would have to go through the Senate as well. Again, this is more of a discussion for the first year of the biennium than the second year of the biennium. I think it's a much larger discussion than we're having here tonight. The clerk will take the roll.
Pepin?
No.
Albright?
No.
Bernardi?
Aye.
Flanagan?
Aye.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hoppe?
No.
Portman?
Aye.
Isaacson?
Aye.
Kreisha?
No.
Mack?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
O'Driscoll?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pulowski? Pinto?
Aye.
Sanders?
Nope.
Scott?
No.
Swedinsky?
No.
Thiessen?
Aye.
There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment to the amendment as amended is not adopted. Now to the underlying amendment, the proposed change to Joint Rule 2.06. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the SCR 8-A11 as an amendment to the amendment. They're actually both dealing with Rule 2.06. This is the one that got sent down to the Committee on Rules and Legislative, but it got sent down to us on the floor last week. It's 3 pages, I believe. And what this amendment does, members, is basically says that conference committee reports and concurrences, if a bill is coming over from the Senate and we are just asked to concur in the bill or amendments that the Senate made, that they have to be on our desks for 24 hours before we vote on it. Again, allowing the public to weigh in and understand what's in the bill, allowing members to read the bill and understand what's in the bill. I think this is just good practice for us. It's easily accomplishable, if that's a word. I don't know. And so I would ask your support and ask for a roll call on this one.
Thank you. A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Is there a discussion on this? Anybody would like to testify from the public on this one? Okay, members, I would encourage a no vote at this. The concurrent resolution was, of course, agreed upon by the Speaker and the Majority Leader in the Senate, and I believe we mentioned it to you earlier as well, the same day, Representative Thiessen. I have no reason to believe that Senator Bach necessarily wants to go on this route. He hasn't approached me in this discussion at all, and again, for the same reasons, I would ask members to vote no on the SCR8A11 amendment. So just to be clear, we're going to the take a vote on the amendment to the amendment, the SCR8A11, in a moment here. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, this is one that I think all of our constituents have talked to us about at one time or another, and that people, when you go out to the public and ask them, you know, and you see it at the federal level too, lots of complaints. For instance, I remember when the Affordable Care Act was passed, Republicans complaining over and over again, you drop this on our desk and we have to vote it without getting a chance to read it. I don't know when the House started caring what Senator Bach thought particularly. That's a new development. I would say...
it's a joint rule.
But it's a joint rule that we can send over to them and then let the Senate make a decision as well. So I think we should... I don't know that the fact that Senator Bach hasn't weighed in one way or the other, or any other senator has weighed in one way or the other, should limit the House's ability to do this. But I would ask for a roll call. Maybe Representative Mack can wait to take this vote, or Representative Scott can wait to take this vote before we take off. This is actually one I would imagine, Representative Scott, that you would be very interested in, since you're so concerned with the public input and making sure data and information is available. Allowing 24 hours for people to review the bill, I think, makes lots of... I would imagine you would be very supportive of this idea.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, Representative Thiessen, if you'd have brought this forward when the majority leader was asking you for ideas for any changes to the permanent rules, that would have been the time to do it. I am perfectly fine taking this up. We have a Data Practices Commission, and this is the kind of thing that the Data Practices Commission comes and takes up. We had several meetings during the interim, and once again, you didn't bring this forward during that time either, when you could have. So I would encourage you to bring these things to the Data Practices Commission moving forward. But in the middle of a legislative session, a biennium, is not the time to change the rules. So.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Thiessen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I appreciate that. I actually do have legislation pending in your committee right now to actually ask you to look at data practices and a number of other rules that would be statutory changes. I don't know that we've ever sent rules to the Data Practices Committee, and this isn't particularly a data practices issue. This is just saying, let's get 24 hours notice before we vote on stuff so we know what we're voting on. That makes perfect common sense to me, and I would again ask folks' support.
The clerk will take the roll.
Pepin?
No.
Albright?
No.
Bernardi?
Aye.
Flanagan?
Aye.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hoppe?
No.
Hortman?
Aye.
Isaacson?
Aye.
Kreshaw?
No.
Mack?
No.
Nelson?
Aye.
O'Driscoll?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Pulowski? Pinto?
Aye.
Sanders?
No.
Scott?
No.
Spadinsky?
No.
Thiessen?
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Representative Thiessen.
So we're back to the original amendment then, Madam Chair. This again for those following along is for related to conference committees, and that they would provide at least give the public 12 hours to sit with some legislation conference committee report before it is voted on, and that they would have public testimony, a chance to weigh in on that conference committee report. And you know, again, I know that over all of our years of service here, we have seen the kind of examples that Mr. Neumeister was talking about, where pieces of legislation get put into conference committee reports without a lot of people knowing about it. I remember when Representative Kahn slipped in legislation related to it was a data practices issue and led us to about 10 years of debate on whether we should have a newborn screening program in Minnesota. I'm sure she rues the day she slipped that particular one in. But this is something that happens quite often, and I think those are the kind of things that get caught and understood. And it's not just that people are doing this with ill motives. A lot of times things get put in and people don't always understand the full implications of it. That's why we have public testimony. That's why we get the chance for people to actually sit down and review the legislation so we can at least think about maybe the unintended consequences. So I think this, again, would just be good discipline and practice for us, and I would ask that people support it and would ask for a roll call.
Thank you. A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Is there additional discussion? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the Joint Rule 2.06 motion.
Pepin.
No.
Albright.
No.
Bernardi.
Aye.
Flanagan.
Aye.
Freiberg.
Yes.
Garofalo.
No.
Gunther.
No.
Hoppe.
No.
Hortman.
Yes.
Isaacson.
Aye.
Kreisha.
No.
Mack.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
O'Driscoll.
No.
O'Neill.
No.
Pelosi. Pinto.
Aye.
Sanders.
No.
Swidinski.
No.
Thiessen.
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Thiessen?
We don't have to do the last one, Madam Chair.
Representative Thiessen withdraws the last motion. I have nothing further for this meeting tonight, so Rules Committee is adjourned.